Chapter 28, Part 2, The Everlasting Virtue. In the preceding chapter, we began discussing Chapter 28 of the Tao Te Ching, whose first verse reads as follows: He is the valley of the kingdom who knows his masculine strength, yet retains feminine gentleness. We mentioned that the words valley of the kingdom represent being admitted to and participating in the brotherhood of life, the community of the living soul state. All who are engaged in enabling the two monadic currents, the power of causation and the power of gentleness, to cooperate in the right way, are called to belong to this community. If these two powers really are manifesting harmoniously and cooperatively in the nature-born human being, they bring about a complete transformation of that person's life state. All the challenges that accompany the practice of pupilship then no longer present obstacles. The pupil enters a state of inner calm, a serenity which lifts him above his nature-born state. Transfiguration will then begin, and he or she will be fitted for participation in the group of those who are of the same mind and of the same kindred. The new state of being entered by such people when they begin to live and work through the two monadic currents, the twofold power of the rose, is what the Tao calls the everlasting virtue. Hence the words, being the valley of the kingdom, the everlasting virtue will not leave him. He will be restored to the unaffected, uncomplicated state of a child. The two monadic currents which are set free and made active in the candidate make him fit to walk the path of liberation. From that moment onwards, he possesses an ability which he can apply in practice to lift himself above the nature of death, above the experience of life in the nadir. This ability, virtue, will enable him step by step to enter the new nature and join the arc of evolution. He has become a child of God again. The Bible has much to say about this extraordinary virtue of the childship of God. When the two monadic currents present in the human heart combine and the light of the rose can be perceived, the childship, the spirit of the sonship, is born. When a person reforms his approach to life in the right way, then the results will prove, or as John says, the Spirit will testify, that he has become a child of God. A child who is brought up in the right way is guided towards his destiny. Similarly, the pupil who is born into the childship of God and has joined the arc of evolution and is therefore equipped with the everlasting virtue will walk his path upward in the right ways. All this is connected with a task which, particularly, in the beginning, is not fully understood by those who are preparing themselves for the path. That is why Lao Tzu gives his pupils further instruction on this point, telling them that it is necessary for the candidate in the Gnostic mysteries to remain in the shadow and in shame. That sounds rather strange and needs to be understood in the right way. Someone who has succeeded in enabling the two monadic currents, masculine strength and feminine gentleness, the power of causation and divine love, to be expressed harmoniously in the personality, will inevitably experience the inner compulsion to serve, help, and be an example to his fellow human beings who are still living at the bottom of the nadir pit in ignorance and confusion. That is the meaning of the words, "He who knows his own light yet remains in the shadow is an example for the kingdom." A brother or sister who bears the signature of the everlasting virtue will spontaneously enlist in the ranks of the serving brotherhood. Perhaps it would be a good thing to underline, here, the words our text takes as its starting point. The signature: he who knows his own light. This refers to the human being who has activated within himself the two monadic currents as a twofold power of the rose, so that, in the light of the other kingdom, he can discern how things stand in the work field, which is in the shadow. Those who live and work through these two monadic currents will also cooperate in the way necessitated by the fact of inversely proportional polarization. It is precisely this cooperation which will make those involved invincible, because the two divine currents will both be expressed with equal positivity without burning each other. This is a result which can only be attained through cooperation, provided, remember, that the cooperating group has entered the state of the everlasting virtue. So, although the liberated human being has become capable of autonomous creation and realization, he or she will always seek, find, and practice cooperation, and thus group unity. So one can always tell from a worker's habitual behavior and the signature it conveys whether his point of departure lies on the light side of life or on the shadow side. Those who reject this kind of cooperation, or accede to it only in theory but not in practice, and when it comes to it, follow rules that serve their own ego rather than ones that serve the principles of cooperation, are still behaving in a way which typifies the human being of the nadir. People who are approaching the end of their path through the nadir but have not yet found the everlasting virtue do tend to behave like this. They pursue their innate urges towards goodness and achievement, but without letting go of their I centrality, and this only succeeds in accelerating the alternation of opposites. Particularly in a school like ours, such eye-central effort constitutes a perpetual source of difficulties, tensions, and delay. What kind of people approach our school? Usually they are people whose experience of the hopelessness of the nature of death has made them receptive to the universal doctrine. The universal doctrine touches them, and afterwards they go through all the stages of dialectical confusion, because the lid has been removed from the pit and rays of light are boring their way into the darkness, whilst at the same time they are the offspring of parents who have also suffered in the labyrinth of the land of shadows. In all of them there is an impulse towards goodness and a certain willpower, as very faint reflex reactions to the two monadic currents. In addition, they naturally have certain talents. One person might have the ability to organize, another might be able to speak fluently, while another might be good at writing, and so on. From this so varied group of those who are struggling at the bottom of the pit of death, having seen a faint glimmer of the light, the workers are chosen who are to be involved in work for the school. Not because they know the light, but because they seek the light, and are therefore given the opportunity to find it and enter the everlasting virtue through the experiences and suffering that doing the work will bring. That is why the school is a spiritual school. And all who are asked to fulfill tasks as workers are told about group unity and its requirements set by the holy law, and, in obedience, yearning, and understanding, they join in that group unity and cooperation quite spontaneously. In this way, a community of friends comes into being, for friendship too is a reflex reaction to the monadic currents, and that is how, through Gnostic work, which has to be built from the lowest level upwards, a group is formed that does not yet possess the light, but only tries to do so full of sincerity and devotion. They do not yet know their own light. Their sun has not yet risen, but the radiant light of the living body illuminates them unto this rebirth. Now, such a team of workers only needs to have a few members who are overshadowed by adversarial forces, and physical and psychological degenerations offer plenty of scope for that. And straight away, delaying actions will arise, as well as serious danger to the progress of the school's work. Yes, sometimes even the very existence of the school is threatened. Why? Well, you know the requirements of group unity. The monadic reflexes of goodness are active in you. The adversary knows how you are likely to think and act during this phase in your life. Carried away by your love for your fellow group members, you will not realize the need to take an objective distance from your relationship with them, and you will not even see the danger this presents. Yet this love is not the real love, but its monadic reflex in your nature-born state. This reflex reaction in your unborn state is mistaken for love. Thus, the way is paved for a fatal delay. The help of divine love, which must be given to all who deviate from the path, is a rectifying, correcting help, the kind of help that will prevent the other person from causing harm. This help has to protect the spiritual school above all, as the first priority, because the school is the means, the instrument, through which those who participate in the everlasting virtue approach those who still dwell in shadow and shame. The school is also the place in which people are enabled to carry out the work of developing the everlasting virtue. If these two aspects of the spiritual school are clearly understood, all kinds of misunderstandings can be avoided. For to lose the school means to lose everything. So that is why, throughout all the years of its existence, the spiritual school has been working on the formation of a special group within the group at large. From the outset, it was decided that it would be this special group that, starting from first principles, would enter the valley of the kingdom and possess the everlasting virtue. The community of the Golden Head, with its 32 members, constitutes this special group, which is intended to guide the inner work and therefore to form the governing head of the living body of the school. In addition, there is the sixth aspect of our spiritual school, which has been active for a number of years. The work performed in this group cannot be done by nature-born means, but only through higher faculties. This task is carried out for the benefit of everyone in the spiritual school. Thirdly, we have a group which, through Grail magic, is urged towards an inner life that will ultimately lead to conscious participation in the divine soul life. It would take us too far from our subject to go any further into these things at the moment, but one thing at least should be clear by now. These groups could not fulfill their task if their basis were in the land of shadow and shame, but only if their basis is in the land of the truly living. So now we can understand Lao Tzu's words. He who knows his own light, yet remains in the shadow, is an example for the kingdom. Being an example for the kingdom, the everlasting virtue will not fail him, and he will return to the infinite. He who knows his own glory, yet remains in shame, is the valley of the kingdom. In the next chapter, we will tell you more about the path of sacrifice, followed by those in whom the powers of the two monadic currents are fully active.